After you said that was you, did he say anything?
Yes.
What did he say?
He said, I may have done it, but they ain't going to get me for it.
I would consider him to be humanoid garbage, a waste of atmospheric air.
I really like Frank. He would make us, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Would someone please explain to me how someone can have a tape recorder held 4 inches from their face during a 20-minute interview and later claim, under oath, that they had no idea the interview was being recorded? I was wondering that Wednesday when Frank Rising testified to just that. Frank Rising was a sight to behold Wednesday. He walked into the courtroom wearing a black and white striped convict's uniform, leg shackles, and handcuffs. His chains were rattling louder than those of Jacob Marley's ghost. A quarter of a century ago, Rising was cellmates with Stanley Liggins in the Scott County, Iowa jail. In Liggins' 1993 and 1995 trials, Rising testified that Liggins admitted to killing Jennifer Lewis. Wednesday was no different. But his sworn testimony didn't match with what he told suspect convictions in 2016. I called ahead and set up a meeting with Frank Rising near a construction site in Sioux City, Iowa, where he had been working. After he had finished troweling concrete, we stood alone in an empty parking lot. I took out my recorder and began asking questions. Here's what we told me back then.
Well, that was a pretty important thing that you did 26 years ago.
I was forced to do it.
You were forced to do it? How'd that
kind happen? Of, you know what I mean? I didn't sit in a jail cell with them. I knew they did that on purpose, you know, to put me in a place where there was somebody else that did something like that. I didn't know what he did until I got my TV in that night. And I told him, I said, that's you, you motherfucker. And he says, yeah, it's me, but they'll never get me for it. Well, they were listening on the speakers, and I was brought out of my cell and told I needed to testify or else I'd be charged with accessory after the fact. You see the pictures?
I was there.
And they showed me the pictures, and it was one of the most grossest things I've ever seen before. I was surprised, too. I was just watching TV, and I said, that's you. He said, yeah, but they ain't going to get me for it. That's all he said. And that was about the length of our conversation.
So when he said he ain't going to get you for it, you took that as him admitting that he did it?
Yeah. But they weren't going to catch him. You know, he thought he had everything covered.
But here's what he said in court on Wednesday.
How did you get along with Mr. Liggins when the two of you were in a cell?
Didn't talk to him.
Okay. At some point, did that change?
When I got a TV.
When you got a TV?
Yep.
And what happened when you got a TV?
I seen him on the news.
What was the news about?
The death of a 9-year-old girl.
What happened after that news thing about the death of the 9-year-old girl?
I told him that was you.
Why did you say that?
Because he never said nothing to me. We've never talked.
Was his picture on the TV, though?
Yes.
So you saw at that point then that he was involved, or at least charged with, the death of a 9-year-old girl?
Yes.
And after you said that was you, did he say anything?
Yes.
What did he say?
Said, I may have done it, but they ain't going to get me for it.
I may have done it, but they ain't going to get me for it?
Yes.
Did he say anything else?
No.
Did you say anything to him?
No.
After that, after he made that statement, did you notify anybody?
The jailer. The jailer.
A jailer?
Yeah.
Did you have any knowledge as to whether or not the conversation you had with that reporter was being taped?
No, I didn't.
Have you since learned that it was taped?
Are you telling me it was taped?
No, I'm just asking you, have you since learned it was taped?
No.
But you do have a memory that you told the reporter that law enforcement came to you because they were listening in on you. Is that right?
I might have said that. I just wanted them out of my life.
Would that have been the truth?
No, I just wanted to get rid of him because he came to my job site when I was working.
You know how long you talked to him?
I think I gave him 15 minutes.
And did you tell that reporter that you believe that they put you in with Mr. Liggins on purpose?
Mm-hmm.
Is that your belief today?
No.
Did law enforcement ever show you any pictures?
No.
Jennifer Lewis?
No.
Did you tell the reporter that you saw the pictures?
Yes.
Did you tell the reporter that those were just horrible pictures?
Yes.
Remember what those pictures were?
Have I never seen them? How could I tell them?
Who's the detective you talked to after you talked to the jail?
I don't know, not know. A lot of years ago.
Was it a detective with the Davenport Police Department?
I'm sure it was.
And you don't remember a name?
So now he is saying police officers never threatened him. He informed on Liggins because it was his civic duty, and no one ever showed him grisly photos of Jennifer Lewis. Why did Frank Reisling change his story? We don't know. But we do know that he is now in police custody, which he wasn't in 2016 when I interviewed him. We also know that jurors will not be allowed to hear the 2016 suspect conviction interview of Frank Reisling. Much information is being withheld from jurors. Some undisclosed facts, such as that Stanley Liggins was convicted of sexually abusing another 9-year-old girl in an incident occurring a month before Jennifer's death, would likely benefit the prosecution if it were disclosed to jurors. But if the tapes of Frank Reisling presenting an alternate story than the one he gave in court were heard by jurors, it would likely benefit the defense. Rules of evidence apparently prevented the tape from being played. While Stanley Liggins' current defense team declined to discuss Frank Reisling with suspect convictions after court on Wednesday, here is how Mike Tobey, who represented Liggins in his 1995 trial, described him.
I would consider him to be humanoid garbage, a waste of atmospheric air. He is a born thief, burglar, liar, all of those things that it takes to survive your way through life, committing felonies at a level that at least won't get you a death sentence someplace.
So why was Frank Reisling in police custody Wednesday? Well, the Quad City Times reported Reisling was arrested September 10th on a material witness warrant from Scott County. According to the complaint filed by the Davenport Police Department, Reisling is a necessary witness to the Liggins' case, who had not made himself available for services of a subpoena for trial. But Reisling said he was picked up earlier for an offense like a parole violation. Here is how Rising's friend, Aaron Flood, an Omaha, Nebraska surgical technician, described the situation.
So he is working at a bakery, basically a manufacturer part of the bakery. He has a full-time job, and they showed up at his work, and Omaha police, I guess, took him out. Again, my boyfriend would know more, but they took, because he worked there as well, he was there. They took him out of his work. Yeah, that's what I know. They escorted him out.
What kind of person do you find Frank to be? I mean, you got to know him a little bit.
So, I really like Frank. He made me, he would make us, breakfast, lunch, dinner. He would help. I know he helped my boyfriend around the house, doing odd jobs around the house. And he was a really good guy. He was always willing to help out for, you know, for a place to live and a place to stay and all that other stuff.
John Hanlon, executive director of the Illinois Innocence Project, said jailhouse informants are a leading cause of wrongful convictions and a sign that a prosecutor may be short on evidence.
I think 4 out of 5 prosecutors, if you talk to them, which I have, would say some version of this. We are not going to use a jailhouse informant unless for some reason we absolutely have to, and that it's a sign of desperation on behalf of a prosecutor. Sometimes there's a big hole in a case, and a jailhouse informant is used to try to fill that hole. And sometimes there's just not that much there. This is an awful, awful crime. You know, any murder cases, but this case is particularly gruesome and disturbing on so many levels. And the worse a case is, the more a prosecutor has to address it and has to put on everything to try to get a conviction. And that's not taking a shot at a prosecutor. I think all prosecutors acknowledge that there is pressure in a community to resolve horrific offenses such as this one. And sometimes horrific offenses make for desperate and horrific decisions in terms of what witnesses are going to be utilized.
But the biggest problem with jailhouse informants is that they often provide false information, Hanlon said.
We've been able to, meaning in the Innocence Group, we've been able to discern that there are consistently 6 areas of evidence that contribute to wrongful convictions, 6 kinds of evidence or other phenomenon in a courtroom or during the investigation or trial of a case that contribute to a wrongful conviction. DNA is beautiful in that regard. DNA convicts guilty people, but DNA also exonerates innocent people. But then even beyond that, allows a look back as to, wow, this person was wrongfully convicted. We know that now due to DNA. Why did they get wrongfully convicted? And there has been a lot of research done, and the research has boiled it down to 6 different factors. And one of those 6 is the prosecution's use of jailhouse informants. In fact, jailhouse informant testimony in the state of Illinois was the leading cause of innocent people being sent to death row.
But Mike Toby said jailhouse testimony tends to be effective.
I'm Benjamin Payne, reporter with WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm speaking with Scott Reeder, who is in Waterloo, Iowa, covering the retrial of Stanley Liggins, who's charged with the murder of 9-year-old Jennifer Lewis in 1990. Scott, thanks for joining me.
It's great to be here.
Now, when we spoke on Tuesday, Scott, you said that you had expected the prosecution to rest its case on Wednesday. Is that what they did?
No, unfortunately, they said they have 2 more witnesses to call, and they got done a little bit early today, but they said that they didn't have the 2 other witnesses available, but they expect to rest tomorrow, or I should say on Thursday.
So who testified today on Wednesday?
Well, the star witness, I would say, today was a guy by the name of Frank Rising. I mentioned him in yesterday's episode. He was a cellmate of Stanley Liggins, who testified in the 1993 and 1995 trials that Stanley admitted to killing Jennifer Lewis in his cell. I went out to Sioux City and I interviewed him into 2016. He said, well, I was coerced into testifying because the police said if I didn't, they were going to charge me as accessory to murder after the fact. Now he says that's just not true. And he testified he had no idea he was being recorded during that interview. Well, gosh, I had a tape recorder 4 inches from his nose for 20 minutes while I was interviewing him out in the middle of a parking lot. I would think that he would be pretty well aware that that was that was going on. But it was interesting that he came in. He was dressed in a convict's uniform, black and white stripes. He's wearing leg shackles and he was handcuffed. And you could hear him rattle as he walked up to the witness stand and testified.
And do we know what he's in prison for?
He's been in prison for a variety of things over the last, 20 or 30 years. I mean, he's done some burglary, he said. He's done had a lot of alcohol-related convictions. He has, he said most recently is something akin to a parole violation, although he's not out on parole. But it's not reporting to the person he's supposed to report to routinely. And I got a call from a friend of his who says he was hauled off of out of his job when police just showed up and to take him away for this trial. So it's interesting what's happened with him.
And who else testified?
Well, we had some posthumous testimony from Detective Kevin Murphy. And he talked about going and interviewing a variety of people in the case and focusing in on Stanley Liggins and why they focused in on him. And, you know, they had a weather expert talk about what the weather was like that day in 2017, or excuse me, on September 17th in 1990. So it was kind of a hodgepodge of witnesses, but really, to me, the most intriguing one of the day was Frank Rising. And you could look at the faces of the jury and you could tell that they were kind of repulsed by the guy. You know, so I have to wonder, is this, if they don't like this particular witness, are they going to be more likely to frown upon other prosecutorial witnesses as well? You know, like, well, we know this guy isn't that great, but maybe there's things we don't know about these other people. I don't know. I mean, I think you're going to, at the very least, have to have a prosecutor that can make a good closing argument and make an argument for why this guy should be believed.
So is he saying that he did hear Stanley Liggins confess to him without being coerced by police?
He is saying that he heard Stanley Liggins confess, which is what he also told me. But he's also saying the police didn't coerce him. He just was making that up and that he was just trying to get rid of me. I find that difficult to believe that he would just make something up out of the blue and say that. But stranger things have happened, Ben.
Was there anything else you wanted to mention from Wednesday's proceedings?
I just think it'll be interesting to see how things play out on Thursday. We're expecting to hear from Jennifer Lewis's mother. And I think that'll be a very emotional type of piece of testimony. And I think it's just going to be, and then the case goes over to the defense for them to present their case. So I think it's going to be a very intriguing case to watch as it winds down here over the next week.